Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm very pleased to be joined by former associate editor of America and a resident of America House, Father Peter Schneller. Welcome, Father Peter.
Thank you. Happy to be with you, Tim.
Now, you just recently returned from a trip to Vietnam. Maybe you could talk a bit about what prompted this trip.
I would say the need over there for somebody to teach theology to a number of young Jesuit seminarians. I have taught in Chicago and Africa, and fascinated to learn more about Vietnam and to be invited there to help out. So I was there 2 years ago for 6 weeks, teaching two different courses to about, that was a small group of seven. This time I had 19 young seminarians, and I had a three-week course on liturgy. The reason why I'm needed is because while they have many Jesuits, many vocations, many young scholastics in Vietnam, they have very few teachers, Jesuits who are teachers. So they rely upon Jesuits coming from Australia or America or parts of Asia to fill in the various courses needed. This is all in Ho Chi Minh City, Saigon, where St. Joseph's Scholasticate, as it is called, is located.
Now, you were, I should mention, in Africa for 22 years, so you have a long history of doing this kind of work. In Vietnam, what was it like going back to a country? I'm sure you know, as most people did, very closely followed the Vietnam War. What's the country like for someone, aware of that history, coming back and seeing what things are like today?
I was surprised, amazed, and enthused by my experiences there. Of course, the Vietnam War was on my mind, but in a remarkable way that seems to be behind them. They are moving ahead in church, in culture, in business, in politics. And sure, there are remnants there. There are cemeteries, and then one of the major museums in Saigon is the War Remnant Museum, which takes you right back to some of the terrible sufferings of the people. It's from the Vietnamese perspective, so it's critical of America. It reduces you to silence to see what happened there. But that's the past, and it's obviously still there, but they are moving ahead at all fronts in terms of education, in terms of cooperation even between the government and the Catholic Church and the Society of Jesus.
Yeah, we were just talking earlier. You mentioned that the church made a decision at some point to work with the government. What's the history there?
Right. Well, the war ended basically 1975 was the reunion of North and South, with the North more victorious. It was 1980, 5 years after that, that the Catholic bishops were able to come together at a major assembly and put forth where they stood. And the Jesuits basically were part of that, saying that the Catholic Church would cooperate with this government, not fight against it, not just be in opposition, but try to cooperate with it for the benefit of the people. That, I believe, was the right decision, and it's worked out well. Here we are how many years after that, and the church, as I say, is growing very well. So is the Society of Jesus. It's not totally without problems. Now and then they round up a few priests, or if there's a demonstration they think is against them, the government will intervene. But basically it's a cooperation process going on. The one sad factor, I would say, as a Jesuit, is that we're not allowed to run schools. So we do have institutes, we do have retreats we can offer, and some parishes where we help out. But we're not able to open up educational institutions, which we think would be wonderful, because our tradition goes back to doing that. And one of the earliest Jesuits there was the famous Jesuit Alexandre de Rhodes, French Jesuit. And he was responsible for translating the language into Portuguese and Latin. And then he ended up writing the alphabet for the Vietnamese people. So they look upon him as one of their great intellectual leaders of the past who gave them the language they use today.
Yeah, maybe you could speak a bit more about the Jesuit history in the country. How far does it go back?
Yeah, way back to 1615, 1614, 15. They just celebrated the 400th anniversary with masses, and for example, in the huge cathedral, Notre Dame Cathedral in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City. The Jesuits were there for several hundred years, not without difficulties. The man I mentioned, Father Rhodes, at one point was condemned to death, and then it was commuted to exile. So he went to Persia and died there, a good Jesuit missionary, always on the move.
Now, in terms of, we don't have the time here to go into the history of the church in Vietnam, but suffice to say, during the Vietnam War, the Catholics were affiliated with those who were opposing the communist regime.
Very much. It was under the French influence, French Indochina. Many of the Catholics were speaking French and, as you just said, were opposed to the North Vietnamese regime. So they suffered because of that. But now there has been, I think, a remarkable turnaround. And now there's cooperation. And as we said, there are a tremendous number of vocations, growth in the church and growth in vocations to religious life, priestly life, and to the Society of Jesus. That's what I could speak about a bit more because it's, for me, amazing that we have this Scholasticate House of Studies with about 55 young Jesuits there right in Ho Chi Minh City. We have nearby a novitiate with 25, well, it's more than that, it's 30, 35 novices. And most remarkable for me are we have 150 candidates, serious candidates who are being looked at and being given spiritual direction. These young men, mostly going to universities or even completing it, want to become Jesuits, so they are in the process. And there's a waiting list, let's face it, a waiting list because they cannot take such a large number at this time. One of the questions asked is why this boom in vocations? I'm no expert, but part of it would be large Catholic families. The church is close to those people in the villages, in the central, the north, especially in the central area of Vietnam. And also perhaps the fact that the government is communist or atheist. So there is a bit of opposition and a bit of tension at times. And persecution tends to bring out a strong faith, and I believe that's part of why some of the young men and women are trying to move towards priesthood and religious life.
You mentioned young women. Are there also women entering the religious life there?
Very, very many. The nearby parish where we have Sunday morning mass, there are, I don't know how many, but a number of young women there dressed, usually with not traditional, but with a very distinct religious habits, I should say. And they're helping out with the mass there, helping the children with the singing, and helping with catechesis after the mass. The mass, by the way, it's a children's mass. I went to it several times. The priests really interact well with the children, get them up answering questions, and actually a lot of singing. And the whole mass in Vietnam seems to be, it's a tonal language, and it comes across as a sung mass. It's very, very beautiful. In fact, the priest I mentioned before, the Rhodes, talked of conversation among Vietnamese is like birds singing. it's a sing-song language, very beautiful language.
You say that it comes across
particularly well. It certainly does, very much. And the young children, I like that because they speak with more of a clarity about it than the older people. And you just get a wonderful sing-song effect out of the readings as well as the singing.
So you mentioned that schools are not allowed under the government, but catechesis, religious education, that is allowed in the parish setting?
Right, yeah, before the mass or after the mass, there are hundreds of kids at this little parish, and they'd be in the back there in classrooms, and then they come to the mass. Actually, the children get in the church, and the parents have to sit out on the grass behind the church. There's simply not enough space for everybody, and so it's a children's mass, and they are featured. I got in the church, too, but basically, I was one of the few adults in the church. Catechesis, very important, and growth of the church, new churches, if possible. Any buildings going up have to be approved by the government, and that can take some time, or even refusals. But I was very positive to the attitude of the Catholics, to the priests, and to the Jesuits. It's an optimism. It's a positive look that things are going in the right direction. I mentioned one example, the Loyola Center. from Loyola University Chicago, where they have an overseas program where students from Chicago or elsewhere can join that program and spend a month, 2 or 3 months in Vietnam taking courses there and, of course, sightseeing, but also getting to see the and to work with the people in villages. So things like that are happening. It's not yet courses for credit given by Vietnamese Jesuits or others, but it may be we would like to think moving in that direction as we've established much good and positive, many good and positive ties with education officials in Ho Chi Minh City.
Now, what is the church's relationship there with other religious groups? I mean, you said the state is an atheistic regime, but are there other Buddhist groups?
Certainly Buddhism is the strongest factor there. I really didn't get into that very much. I did visit a few Buddhist temples, and what I liked in one place is on top of two mountains at Vung Tau, we have pictures of that, on the top of one mountain is a large statue of Christ the King, Christ crucified but risen, and on the neighboring mountain is a picture, not a picture, but a sculpture of the Buddha. Small, very huge, fat, and smiling. For me, it was kind of a symbol of the two religious, great religious traditions there, the more contemplative Buddha and the Christ kind of caring for his people with his arms outstretched. But those would be the two major religions. Buddhism is much more numerous than Catholics would be perhaps 10% of the population, which is maybe 8 to 9 million or 10 million out of 100 million people.
Now, there were many more before the war. There are a lot left for the United States and other countries as a result of the war.
Oh, yes. Well, the Vietnamese boat people.
Right.
And they have come, then many have come to America. A number of them now have vocations here in California, New Orleans. There are a number of Vietnamese Jesuits, Vietnamese American Jesuits. It's a remarkable phenomenon. And it, again, points to the incredible energy, resiliency, stick-to-itiveness, and faith of those people. They take the faith with them. So Vietnam, New York City has parishes where there are strong Vietnamese members.
Right. So there's that legacy in this country as well. We're going to put up some pictures, as you mentioned. You mentioned one of them. We're going to put some of those up as a slideshow in conjunction with this podcast. But there are other parts of the country you want to mention other than Ho Chi Minh City that were of particular interest?
Well, this last trip was just 3 weeks, so the only place I saw besides Saigon was Vung Tau, and there'll be pictures of that. On my previous trip for 6 weeks, I was able to get up north to Hanoi, which is a lovely city with lakes right in the middle of it. And then I also got to Ha Long Bay, which is one of the world feature sites. It's in the China Sea. It's these stones, rocks coming out of the China Sea. And it's mystical, beautiful, remarkable. By the way, traveling in Vietnam is also very inexpensive. Tourism is very inexpensive. There are many tourists from America. I'm sure GI is going back there. And there are also many from Australia. So I would recommend it if you're thinking of and I went this last time in February, which was the coldest part of New York City. We had the snowstorms here, and I had 75, 80-degree weather, no rain. One night it rained for an hour or two. They were surprised at that, but beautiful weather in February in South Vietnam. The north would be more cloudy and cooler.
Well, that's a good travel tip. It's maybe expensive to get there, but once you get there, it's very inexpensive.
And long to get there, too. It's a very long trip.
Yes. Well, maybe we can end by speaking about, I mean, you spent 22 years in Africa. You've had this time in Vietnam. I think it's a good reminder for those of us in the church in the United States and Europe who might be very focused on the Western church that there is this vibrant piece of the church that is the global church, which is really important to the future of Catholicism.
Yeah, what a incredible opportunity I've had for 20 years, 22 years in Africa, and then just two different experiences in Vietnam. But it's a reminder of our Catholic faith, our Catholic Church. It was very uplifting, inspiring for me, both places, in Nigeria and other parts of Africa, but also Vietnam, that the Spirit is alive and well and trying to reach out to us and teach us and show us the beauty of the Catholic faith, the importance of it, the treasure we have. And it's certainly clear to me that the young Vietnamese see that and want to be part of it, not just part of it, but to contribute to it, to the future of the church and to the Society of Jesus. Already, the Vietnamese young Jesuits are teaching in other parts of Asia, working in refugee camps in Cambodia, other parts where there are needs.
Yes, it's, I think, an exciting time and a good reminder that, you know, sometimes in this country we may be a little focused on our consumerist needs and, we don't have a government that is persecuting our faith. So in these places where they don't have those freedoms, they don't have, that they are not wealthy, faith is all the more important, and that's a good reminder. Well, Father Peter, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us. We'll put some pictures up online and hope to have you again soon.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. God bless.